My God. Weird. Somebody was talking to me through these speakers. It was really strange. I've never had that experience. I was like, who's talking to me? They're like, not me. It's God, I guess. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. Nice to see you all here. I just want to invite you to come into the presence of this room and leave the world outside those doors, and let's go into prayer and call that greater potential, that greater love we call God into this room. Remembering the truth of our beings, that we are all made in the image and likeness of God. And through Christ's example, we know that we are able to work the same miracles and more that he did. So if we're facing challenges in our lives, health issues, marital issues, just plain old accepting ourselves issues, we know that we can rise into this greater potential, remembering that within us is the ability to find a new channel, to create a new story and affirm that which we are so desiring in our lives at this time. Because we are of spirit. We are the channel of spirit. And through that love, we can come into that wholeness that we are all seeking, so that we may be free of the ailments of the world. Spirit, we give thanks for this in the name and the power of this living Christ within us. Amen. I'm going to let you know that we have prayer partners available to you at the end of the service. If you're facing a challenge in your life, you can just stay seated, and our prayer partner will come and find you and take you down to our beautiful meditation room, and they will pray with you, and they'll get you back on track so that we can be powerful conduits of God's love in this world. So now we want to invite you to sing with us. They say to sing is to pray twice. This is a really fun number. We're going to ask you to stand up and join Aaron and I in this fun song.
I've got love.
I've got love.
I've got peace.
I've got peace.
I've got joy flowing like a river. I've got love.
I've got love.
I've got peace.
I've got peace.
I've got joy flowing like a river. One heart, one mind, one love flowing like a river.
I've got hope,
I've got strength,
I've got
faith to move every mountain. I've got hope,
I've got
strength,
I've got strength,
I've got faith to move every mountain. One heart, one mind, one love, move every mountain.
Let's hear our band.
I've got you,
I've got me,
I've got us coming together. I've got you,
I've got me,
I've got us coming together. One heart, one mind, one love coming together.
Together,
coming together, coming together, coming together.
All right. You guys sound good today. So now that we have come together, please turn to each other and welcome each other, greet each other, tell each other, thank God for you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Unity of Boulder. Let's get these chairs set here. We're going to start things off, as usual, with a few quick announcements. First, I'd like to invite our friend Damiana to come on up here. She's leading a sleep workshop today, starting at 1. It goes from 1 to 3 o'clock. It costs $20. You can sign up for it in the class, and she's going to tell you, or you can sign up for it in the bookstore, and she's going to tell you a little bit about it.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me talk, and I have to keep it very short as instructed. So,
that did not make me sound.
So every day of my week, I show up at my office and I help people who struggle with sleep problems, and I do my very best to help them with whatever tools I have in my office. Including a very specialized type of acupuncture and sleep coaching and herbs and whatever it takes. So this workshop today is for those people who struggle with sleeping problems, who are looking for relief. I have helped a lot of people, and a lot of people have found it helpful, 1 or 2 hours of us collaborating and speaking and such. And then lastly, the other category of people that I love to see in my workshop who found this helpful are people who are maybe stressed out of their minds and have no time in the evening to really wind down and enjoy their evenings. And then also the people who have a bad night here and there. It doesn't look like a big deal, but it may become a big deal. And if you've ever had insomnia or if you've had a friend who has insomnia, you know that it can be debilitating. The struggle is really real. So if I can help people prevent it, that's what I really, really love to do. So I hope you can make it today. It's nap time. I hope we won't all sleep. And if we do sleep during the workshop, then I take that as a success as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Damiana. Once again, you can sign up for that in the bookstore, or you can sign up just before the class at 1 o'clock today. But if you do want to sign up at the right before the class, come a few minutes before 1. If any of you are interested in having a plot in our garden out back here, we're having a meeting also at 1 o'clock today. You just go right on out there and meet with our good friend Joel Gutman, and he'll get you set up with how we have plots, how they work, and just going out there. It's a great time and a great community out there at the garden. Also, in our handout, it says next week, April 29th. Okay, that's a problem, because next week is next week, and April 29th is today. That is incorrect, obviously. It's not supposed to be today, it's next week that we're having a potluck. Just for no real reason other than it's fun to get together and hang out on a nice spring day. And if you have a dish to bring, please bring a dish. Even if you don't, please come on out. We just love having everyone around with us, hanging out and having a good time. And that's following second service next week. Our senior support group meets this Thursday at 2 p.m. And our singles support group meets this Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. And now I'd like to invite all three of our ministers out here for one more announcement.
So we have a big announcement. Let's see here. We are starting a fundraiser, and I think you've been noticing we've been doing some bettering of the building. You've probably seen the beautiful new lighting that we've put in here. We are bringing it into this time, you know, this building was built over 25 years ago, and so it needs freshening and updating. And so the next room that we're going to go to is the Fellowship Hall. We'll be putting new floors, new ceiling in. We're going to take those tiles off and actually do more of an industrial ceiling and make it really more modern in the way things are nowadays, because that's a way for us to bring money in, is wedding receptions. And KGNU rents our place all the time, and Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice. A lot of the nonprofits in Boulder use this facility, and so we're all kind of a community, and so we need to keep it updated so they still want to use our beautiful center. So it'll be floors, it'll be walls. We're going to have an industrial kitchen put in, and really the goal for that is so that we can have our local farmers and our local people that are making health food that's going to be good for our children and for the future. They can make this food in this place and actually get it licensed so they can actually get it on the counters out in our community, so we can actually be a part of that process as well. So that's what the industrial kitchen for, and also that it brings a nice rent into the church. When people rent those facilities, they have to spend quite a bit to use it. So these are all good things to keep these doors open. The rental factor of this building, this sanctuary last night was rented by KGNU and Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice, and it was packed. It is these rentals that keep these doors open. I mean, as much as your tithes are awesome and they help us, we have to have that rental ability. So if you want to join us, the Groverland family came together. What did we do, Shad? You're so cute standing up there.
We reached into our couch cushions like this. And we put together all of our quarters, and we came up with $5,000. So the Groverland family is putting up $5,000 of matching funds to try to, yeah. So we're going to match your donations dollar to dollar to go towards that drive. And we know if you've ever listened to NPR, you don't want a drive to last forever, right? A fundraising drive, you want to do it. You want to get it finished. You want to see the product and the result of your efforts. So go ahead. If anyone else can match, if you want to put up matching funds as well like we have, we would invite you to do that. You could see any one of us about that. But what we also do in a fundraiser like this, I want to make sure you understand, it's very important. This is above and beyond giving. So you still give your regular amount on Sunday or Wednesday or whenever you give your regular amount. If you can give above and beyond that amount to this fundraiser, that's what we would ask you to do. So it's not that you shift your giving over to this, because then we don't really accomplish anything, right? So it's got to be above and beyond your normal giving to help us reach this goal and really make that space beautiful and more usable, not just for rentals, but for us and events we want to have here as well. All right?
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Let's do it.
Well said.
So first service, we already blew through some questions, so I think we're going to pick up from where we left off last service, right? So we're probably on question 4. Oh, we're actually on question 5.
Yeah, we are.
And if we run out of questions, we'll loop back around again.
So what can I do to keep my belief from wavering when I am faced with hardship?
Well, I was thinking about this one, and I think it's interesting that that would be a case. And I know that I've been there. I know that probably a lot of us have been in that situation. But it's interesting that we find ourselves in that situation at all, that we would have a belief, we would have a faith or a knowing of God, and that when things didn't go our way, we would sort of throw that out the window. Or it would waver, or we would start to doubt that we had that. And we talked about this a little bit the first service, but I think a lot of that has to do with perception. Right? If life's going my way, it's easy to love God and feel the love of God and to know God's there. And of course I believe in God. God's everything in my life. And then life gets difficult and we're like, I don't know about this God character. Right? I was getting abundance poured on me before, and now it's not so easy. I'm not so sure about this God character. And then we start to doubt and we start to get angry and do these things. But the only thing that has happened is our perception has shifted. In one instance, we perceived life to be good, and we very much felt the presence of God. In the next instance, we perceived life to be bad, and we felt less of God. But did God really change in either of those situations? Did God all of a sudden check out and say, oh, I'm sorry, this is a Monday, I don't work Mondays, so you guys are on your own, good luck with that. No, it's our perception of what is good or what is bad or what is favorable or unfavorable. So when I say this is an unfavorable event, all of a sudden I start to doubt God. Well, that's not really fair to God. So I think the answer is having a belief system that surpasses your own perception is how you deal with that. And that means, like Lao Tzu said, do the work while it is easy. And it's one of my favorite quotes from him. Do the work while it is easy so that you are ready for the difficulty when it comes. Be meditating, be praying, be doing your practice really solidly so that when difficulty comes, it doesn't waver. It's already set up as a routine. So I think that would be my answer. You guys don't have anything to add to that?
Not really.
Okay.
I think it was a one-note question. I mean, I think you covered it. It was very well done, Chad. Thank you.
Well, I can add a little something to that. We're involved in a spiritual practice. That's what, you know, true religion is all about. We are seeking to understand our relationship to life. You may call it also to God or the universe. We're seeking to understand that. As we pursue the spiritual practices and the principles that we are sharing with the people in Unity, as we pursue that, we strengthen our awareness of a presence greater than ourselves. And we get to a certain place where even in the face of hardship, we know we can turn within. And this is really something that is possible. We can turn within and feel the peace of mind that comes from being in the presence of this grand love and intelligence we refer to as God. So along the way, you say, when things are going wrong and I lose, you know, I waver, that's going to happen if you're just beginning. That's going to happen along the way. But at some place in your process, if you continue to do the spiritual practice, you will arrive at a place where you live above the storms of life. You're still involved with them to a certain degree. You're still making decisions. You're still attempting to fix and heal, but you are not emotionally affected or brought down. And that's what the Master of Life meant when he said, I'm not praying for you to take my disciples out of the world, but keep them from the illusionary evil so that they would be in the world but not of the world. And that's where you get when you practice your spiritual practices. You get to a place where you're still in the world, you're still making decisions, but you're no longer affected, tossed to and fro by the changing conditions of the world. Even great hardship may come, but you will be in a place knowing the presence of God will out, that all will finally resolve and it will be harmonious.
So these questions were written in by you guys, so some of you will recognize some of your questions. For the last week, people have been sending in the questions, and the topic was on the proof of God. And so this topic, Shad said it, and they really agreed with it and thought this would be a great topic. For me, I was like, I don't know about this topic. I don't even really know where to even start with it, because for me, I've never, ever questioned whether God is real or not. It's so present in my life. Even when I've had dark times in my life, that's never been even a question in my mind. But after thinking about it and doing research on the proof of God, it kind of actually stirred up to see, well, what do people feel about not believing in God? And I learned a lot, actually. So I'm glad that you picked the topic, because it's not something I've never really had to think about it for myself. But what I realized is that's actually what we do for a living. Prove God to people. I mean, that's literally what we're doing every single Sunday in here. I felt so uncomfortable with this topic. It was really odd. So this question is, what if I feel the presence of God and my spouse doesn't and is unwilling to join me on a spiritual path? And this particular question, I would say that this is a topic that all of us, when it comes to counseling, this is a pretty big question for people. This comes up a lot. especially when somebody's really gone on that path and they're really heading on it and they're feeling this amazing, glorious connection with Spirit and they're feeling that song dancing in their life and then their spouse is still up to the old behaviors and the old judgments and they don't want to really live within that same kind of energy. The thing is as far as this question is concerned, it really, your spiritual path should never actually have anything to do with what your spouse is doing on their spiritual path. Honestly speaking, this journey is about us with God personally. It's about our own witnessing to our character, our ethics, our honor, and how much we are an open vessel for this greater energy we call God. You know, like for instance, I said at last service, you know, I have lots of friends still that are from my high school life. I grew up here in Boulder, so it's hard to leave your whole life because everybody's here. A lot of us are still here. We've raised our kids together and everything. And a lot of my friends aren't on a spiritual path at all. And I have daily conversations with people that are not a believer like I am. And I don't really feel the responsibility to have to convince them of anything that I believe. And that's how we still have a friendship, because they're good people. They're great people. In fact, they're extremely funny because, you know, people that are sarcastic about the ways of the world, it's fun to be around because it's hilarious to look at some of the dark stuff that happens in the world. Sometimes it's nice to just be able to play and not have to always be so spiritually perfect, you know. But at the same time, when it comes to a spouse, it's a little different because you're with that person all the time and they're in your home. So I wanted to use an example because Mike, my husband, we've been married for 3 years, we've been together for five. He was an agnostic Jew when I met him. And I was obviously already a minister here. And I didn't even really know that about him for a few months because we didn't really, it never crossed the conversation because what I had witnessed in this person was such an honorable, kind, thoughtful person. I mean, everything about the character of this man was enlightened as far as I was concerned.
Is he in here?
Are you in here?
Trying to make him feel good? I'm just trying to earn brownie points.
Yeah. Anywho, I mean, and so when he did see it, I mean, my heart dropped because it was like, oh, wow, this could be, you know, an issue. But I realized I don't know if it's important for me to be around people that consider themselves religious or spiritual as much as they hold themselves accountable in following that divine compass, you know, knowing what is right and what is wrong and how we treat one another, you know, knowing about this law of attraction, how you are a mirror of what you're creating in your life. And he already had that. And so it really didn't matter. But then you know, and he grew up going to a synagogue here in Boulder, and he said that, I couldn't think of the word, that word was beyond my mouth right now. And he always said that the rabbi was not, he was very underwhelming. It was not the most powerful rabbi, so he really didn't get locked into the practice. But then when he came and started working here and started to witness how this center is, you know, really run on faith and intuition, and everybody has a say to follow their divine guidance. Eventually, his language became unity so quickly, I can't even believe it. And we were talking about it yesterday, and I said, so are you still an agnostic? And his answer was,
I don't really know how to answer that. I would say I'm on the other side of agnosticism. I don't have a religion. I still prefer the word universe to God, but I refer to it in the same way.
Who's this guy yelling in the back of the room? When I started doing counseling, it's a very shocking experience. I was really shocked how immature marriages are. Honestly speaking, from people I really had held in high regard, I was shocked at how immature marriages are and the expectations people have on their spouse, unwritten, unspoke about, never communicated expectations on their spouse, but yet they're upset that they're not feeling this expectation. Across the board, I saw that and it blew my mind. And I realized they're not having the most basic, fundamental questions and conversations with each other. They never even discussed, would you ever like to have kids? It was just like, well, I can't believe he doesn't want to have kids. He's like, well, I never wanted to have kids. Did you guys ever have this discussion? They hadn't. But so like spirituality, that was 37 conversations later they still haven't had. So the sad thing was that these marriages were built on these expectations that were never discussed. And so a discussion simply of, I like hiking. Do you like hiking? No. Do you mind if I go hiking without you? No, it's fine. That's a very basic conversation, but it's the same with spirituality. I'm meditating, I'm growing, I'm expanding. Is it okay if I do that? Sure, that's fine. Can I do that without you? Yeah, go right ahead. Are you okay if I don't do it? Yeah, that's fine. That's an adult conversation to have, but then to brood over they're not getting more spiritual. You know, I'm getting more spiritual. How could they not be getting more spiritual? They didn't decide to get more spiritual, right? It's not on them. You've chosen to do this. If you started hiking and they didn't want to, you'd probably be okay with that, right? Having these unwritten expectations of the partner blew my mind that I had to sit people down and go, all right, do you guys like each other? Did you ever have that conversation?
Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
If you want to turn.
There is another phenomenon to that. When someone is on a spiritual journey and is married, sometimes the other person who's not on the journey will try to impede or try to put down or try to continually create some kind of dissension. That's just a phenomenon because for some reason they don't want to get on the journey, but they don't want their spouse to be on the journey. So you may find that happening. But a recommendation made a long, long time ago, I think it was in the Edgar Casey Foundation, that trying to confront your spouse who's not interested in spiritual practice or anything is not necessarily the best way to go about it. But if you were to take one of the books that really were inspiring to you, or even, you know, some of these tiny little booklet-type pamphlets, just leave them around the house so that when you're not there, you know, the spouse can pick it up and read through it. Sometimes that works to help somebody, you know, get past their ego and get involved. But that is something. See, they're both right. That does come up in counseling a lot, that a spouse is not interested in the spiritual work. That's just the way it is. Now, I'll give you an example about life. The goal for us in this world of changing tides and circumstances is to be able to sustain peace of mind, peace of heart. And every marriage is different. People have different relationships. Some people are married and their husband is away as a salesman for 3 or 4 months at a time and things like that. Others, you know, they're together all the time and the spouse feels upset when the one other wants to go bowling or something on an evening. So it's all this different stuff. But the point is, peace of mind is the measure of existence. So there's an old commercial in which a guy comes out with a beaker full of, you know, murky liquid, and he says, this is your stomach with stomach acid. Then he takes 2 Tums tablets and throws them in, stirs it, and it clears up the liquid. He says, Tums can neutralize 38 times its weight in excess stomach acid, but it can't neutralize 39. Let me explain that. You can, in any situation you find yourself, whether it's in a marital situation or a condition at work or whatever, you can bring your peace of mind, you can bring your help, your insight, your consideration, your compassion. You can do all that. to a certain degree, you can live with a spouse that doesn't go along with your spiritual journey. As long as you can sustain peace of mind. If you cannot sustain peace of mind, in other words, if your spouse is so irate and so against you doing this process, then you have to remove yourself. Because if you cannot have peace of mind, you cannot be in that situation, period.
But your practice should bring you more peace of mind.
That's true.
And make you more tolerant, and make you more understanding, and make you more compassionate.
That's the third Tums tablet.
That's the third Tums tablet.
But there are people that have mental disorders that we could push you past your peaceful points.
There's no doubt. I mean, I've counseled people and they said, my spouse is abusive. And I said, that's a very dangerous word. Mm-hmm. I need you to define what that means to me. Well, they say very mean things. Okay, so that's your definition of abuse. Because if it's physical abuse, then that's unacceptable, right? Then I'd say, we don't have to further this conversation. You need to get out of that situation. If it's abuse as in, you know, they go off and do things and you don't like it, well, we still need to have that conversation, right? You have to be, there has to be, you have to understand your own level of acceptability, and you have to understand what's acceptable spiritually and physically and one of these things. But just running out when things get difficult, that's not the solution, right? We all can grow, so anyway, I just wanted to add that.
Okay.
Marriage is a powerful thing and we should respect that and do the best we can to help it survive.
And Edgar Cayce said that marriage is a spiritual workshop. That's, you know, everything that you need to learn about what's going on in life and how to live life more effectively, you will find in that relationship called marriage. The difference between marriage and relationship, by the way, for those of you that are still in the Boulder consciousness, to get married requires commitment. In other words, in a relationship, yeah, you can hang out together. You can say, we really have good times together. We have common understanding about this and that. We like the same things and don't like other things. But in a relationship, you always have in the back of your mind, yeah, but if the going gets rough, I'm out of here. Okay, that's the Boulder consciousness. In a marriage, and I say this to people when they're coming in to get married, in a marriage, you have to be able to say something different. You have to be able to say, I will be committed to this marriage in a sense that I'm willing to be there in the hard places for my partner and support them going through difficult times as their partner, especially for their growth and their spirituality and their health. I'm willing to do that. If you're not willing to do that, you shouldn't even be getting married, because that's going to come up. In a relationship, there's you, your personality, what you want, and as long as the other person's going along with it, you're fine. But you always have it in the back of your mind. Yeah, if things get rough, I'm out. No, if two people stay together, things are going to get rough. It's not a bowl of cherries. There's pits. So you got to understand. Okay, are you willing to make that commitment for the beauty of your relationship? And the harmony and working together through the hard stuff is what really makes a marriage work and makes it really harmonious and gives you a strength that you wouldn't necessarily have alone. And if you've reached 45, 50 years old, and you're still looking for that 25-year-old partner...
This is the place to do it. Come on down to Union Boulder. I thought that was a sales pitch. I might have missed the point.
No. We practiced that.
And he might have a thing or two to say about the topic that he was just sharing, because he's going to be celebrating his 50th wedding anniversary with our mom in 2 weeks.
All right.
Have we sufficiently?
I think so. We did this question. Let's go.
Okay. If a person has blind faith in God, is he or she better off than someone who is uncertain and has been seeking for years?
That's a great question.
That is.
Yeah. No. It's your turn. Or somebody, I can take it if you want me
well,
to.
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of obvious, personally. Obviously, having blind faith is a beautiful thing because you already live in this sense that God is, you know, at work in every aspect of your life, whether things are good or bad or turbulent, sad, you know, whatever. The blind faith is that it's all of God, you know, and, you know, the people that are seeking and they're still uncertain are really looking through a glass that's half empty and are not an optimistic person in a venture towards God. You know, if you're still uncertain and you've really been seeking for years, you're doing something wrong. Something has happened where you're obviously looking through a lens that's not healthy. Something's happened in your life, maybe in your childhood, or something that has made you build a wall that you probably need to look into that much more so than being on this journey. You got to figure out what is it that's restricting you from your greater good. Is there a part of you that doesn't love yourself because you're still harboring something not good enough about you, or you're harboring something about your childhood, you're harboring something about your parents, or, you know, because if you're seeking and you're not getting results, then you're still shut off. You are not leaning into this greater potential, this love we call God. Clearly, something is wrong, and you got to start looking at what you're holding. What are the seeds that you're planting in your consciousness and in your subconscious mind? You know, what are the power statements that you're holding about your being? Do you realize that you are a child of God, that you're made that way, no matter what the story is? If you live from that reverence and that beauty, then you're going to start to carry a life where it's a miracle existence every day, or at least a couple times a week. You're having experiences where you're like, yes, yes, this is clearly supernatural. This is clearly angelic. This is clearly holy. Otherwise, this is a pessimistic person that's really not seeking if you're still in a state of being uncertain about God, yet you say you're seeking for years. Because, you know, we talk about this a lot in Unity. Nobody's really handed a bad hand of cards. You know, we will, people think that way. If we want to play victim in this world, then we could probably look at our cards and go, well, Betty got a much greater hand this lifetime than we did. She got the wealthy parents. She got to go to the greatest schools and, you know, da-da-da. And so I'm a victim and I'm sitting here and, you know, things aren't going well. And when we realize that we're actually all made equally and we are actually all one. This is not a competitive life. We're not here to one up or put down another person. We're here to find how we can be a creative co-creator with this greater wisdom. And when we learn how to do that, then we're available to really be the change that we want to see in this world. So to be seeking and still be uncertain, you're wasting a lot of time, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's okay sometimes to have the blind faith because it's like Wayne Dyer said, you have to believe it to see it, and that is the truth. You know, you aren't going to see it if you aren't going to be looking for it, and that's the bottom line. So you can always play, you can always make a claim that's going to support what you're seeing. So if you're not seeing anything, then you'll make a claim that it will support, and you know what, the universe will show you that there's nothing to show. But that's because the law of attraction is real. So what we see out in the world is what we're going to see that's coming back. So if you want to change that story, then start seeing what you want to see in this world and watch how it starts to come back to you.
And I think questioning is good.
Yeah.
Questioning is what helps you grow, but doubt is a poison. If you're always doubting, it's a poison in your life. And I see that in so many people's lives. They're questioners, and that's great, but they always doubt what they're finding. And they never bridge that gap between living and experiencing God, right? And so with the religions that we'd say, the blind faith religions, I'm not gonna name any because it's cruel to even say it exists, but when I meet these people, they're beautiful people. A lot of them, I think, are further ahead, I would say, than people on the spiritual path because they've already accepted God totally in their lives. They're not still trying to figure it out and work it out. How does it work with this? With this? They've accepted God totally in their lives, and if that's through blind faith, great. Good on them. We need more blind faith. If it makes people that will go out and serve humanity, which these people do, right? These religions go out and serve in crazy amounts, and they build hospitals, and they build homeless shelters, and they do this stuff because they fully have committed to God in their lives. Whether they've actually ever experienced God in real life or not, I don't know, and I don't care. They're doing so many great things. I'm not going to judge them as less than me because they have a blind faith. I actually respect that, and I have reverence for that, that they've held on to this faith, and they've just ran with it. Instead of spending years going, well, I don't know, I got to see, I got to read different books and find out if that's true, they went, God's real, I'm in, let's do it. Right? And you're like, I got respect for that. Mm-hmm. Props on you.
Yeah.
Another public service announcement. Okay, thank you.
It tells my progress towards the answer. It's all in that book. I've written about 10 books, but this book is my life's work.
Wonderful, thank you for sharing.
I like what Eckhart Tolle said. There will always be those who are more fortunate than you and those who are less fortunate than you. That's just the way life is. So you're saying, when you're saying everybody's dealt the same hand, it's not, you know, from a certain perception, that's not so, because if you're measuring simply by outer conditions and circumstances, certainly it doesn't appear that everybody's been dealt the same hand. But it seems to me that from a soul perspective, each person is dealing with what he or she needs to advance his or her soul on the journey toward enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we go on to another question?
So we've all been dealt the same hand. It might just not be in this life.
So this is just not the good life?
You got
life.
The hand I'm dealing with now last life, and I'll have the hand you're dealing with now next life, but eventually it all washes out in the end.
So you think...
Comes out in the wash.
All right. Have you ever had a run of bad luck in poker?
I lived in Las Vegas. I can't play poker.
You say you can't play poker.
If you live in Las Vegas, you can't gamble. That's a horrible situation.
Is that right?
Well, you can. You shouldn't.
But I spent a great deal, many, many, many years of my life gambling.
That's why I never invited you to live in Las Vegas. I've got an inheritance to watch out on.
But it's helped me. Poker has helped me. All right. We'll go on because
He is good at playing poker. None of us can win against him, that's for sure. All right, so this is the next question, and this is the last one. So the universe operates by uniform laws of nature. Why does it?
Yeah.
And I think that that's really the greatest proof of God are the laws, that you can set your clock to it, that those laws work. It's the law of compensation. It's what you give, you receive. It's what you believe, you will be shown. It's all of the truth that, you know, they're the law of order, you know, and knowing what you give is exactly what you're going to get back in your life. You know, you are the example. What are you harboring in your life? Because it will be shown to you. If you're being nasty in this world, you're only going to have experiences of people being nasty back at you. And, you know, the one thing that I've learned in my life is that so many people are searching for a life outside themselves that they think someday is going to make them happy. And if you simply started to recognize that your life is exactly the magic that you would totally want out there. You're just not in the presence of the life that you already have. That we're missing so much of the life that we already have. And I really see that from the perspective now, looking back on my life, and my kids are all growing, and I have a daughter in college, and I think, God, I wish I wasn't like pining for the house and the cars and the building and all the things that I did and missed so much of that beauty, of the innocence, of watching every moment and feeling every moment, smelling every moment, walking on the earth with those kids and sharing the planet, you know? I know I'm getting off of this, but the laws of nature are quiet. The quieter laws. It's not in your face. It's about being subtly more vibrationally aware of what these true laws are.
Yeah, but
I'm not happy right now, then I'm putting something out there that's making me unhappy. It's not anybody out there, you know?
But I think that you were making a point before this session here about the laws of nature. You know, gravity exists, and you can't deny it. It actually exists. If you put a cup of coffee out on a counter when it's hot and leave it there, it's going to get cold. Why? Why? Why does gravity still exist? Why are we have the laws of, you know, of centrifugal force or the laws of inertia? A body in motion will stay in motion unless impeded by something in its path. Or a body that is still will remain still unless impetus. We have these laws that govern the entire universe. Now, doesn't that prove that there is a God? Because if there wasn't some intelligence that created laws, you couldn't count on anything. You would never know from second to second what's going to happen because it didn't create it. It happened this way all along, so you got saying, okay, there's a law, it's going to operate this way. But if you didn't have that, if you didn't have some type of intelligence that created these rules for the universe to exist, anything could be happening. You could, you know, you put your cup of coffee down for it to get cool, and then you pick it up, and it's hotter than it was before. Didn't happen 2 hours ago.
Starbucks
and it's the law
is
of gravity.
Still working on that.
What?
Starbucks is working on that technology right now.
No. So what I am saying is, if you have any doubts that there is a God, you know, they try to put this back. You know, have the quarrel between the idea that God created everything, or it's just this evolutionary idea. Just think about this. When the first single cell creature in the muck, in the ocean, you see, why did it even go forward? Why did it ever get and go on land? The impetus to go forward, to do something, to improve its condition, its life, to find a better food source, to find a better climate, and this and that. From the very first, it's the nature is that God is pursuing life. Life is God. And we can't get away from it. If you say, well, no, it's just a happenstance, maybe some vast explosion way back when, the Big Bang Theory and all this stuff, get away from that. There's an intelligence at work in life everywhere. If you're missing it, well, you just want to miss it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. There's a movie, some of you have probably seen it, or actually it's a book, it's not a movie yet, called Case for the Creator. And if you have a scientific mind or an inquisitiveness into the world of science, it does a brilliant job of proving how mathematically impossible it is that this planet could be this organized and structured this way. So,
right.
That is that.
Bring a person like that to organize this church.
All right, we're going to take an offering for unity now.
All right.
If you want to give above and beyond your normal gift and you want to write on a check for the fellowship fundraiser, you can do that. We'll know that you're earmarking that check specifically for the fundraiser. And when I take an offering, I also like to remind people that we're not just giving to an incredible organization that's doing so much great work in people's lives in the community. This is actually a spiritual process. This is a spiritual tool. We use this time to challenge that selfish inner ego that says we don't have enough.
We challenge it by trying to give more than is comfortable to give so that we step out of the place of a receiver and we start becoming that human being that is a giver. And this is a spiritual tool right now that I invite you to join me in. And I invite you to say this blessing with me. If you take your offering in your hand, you can repeat it after me when we're done. Divine love is my true life and my conscious destiny. Therefore, I give. If you'll say it with me. Divine love is my true life and my conscious destiny. Therefore, I give.
Come and rest here, come and lay your burdens down. Come and rest here, there is refuge for you now. You'll find my peace and know you'll find my healing. Your heart isn't shattered anymore. I am here. Come and rest here, come and lay your burdens down. Come and rest here, there is refuge for you now. You'll find my peace and know you're not alone. You'll find my healing. Your heart isn't shattered anymore. I am here. Breathe in. Breathe out. You will find me. will find me.
Erna, that was wonderful. I want to let you know that after the service, the ministers always go in the fellowship hall. If you're new today, we'd love to meet you, so just come on over. There's food and bagels and coffee and tea, and we'll introduce you to some new, nice Unity friends today, but we want to have you all stand. We're just going to close the closing benediction. Huh? Oh, the kids are coming in, actually.
Yeah, come on up, kids.
Come on in.
Children. Parade of the children. Who wants to stand in the front?
Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Blessed week.